Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I am in Boston. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune in San Diego. Padres, Red Sox, three games, start of a six-game road trip. Ryan, I want to know where you want to start, but the first thing I want to say is one of my favorite things, like, is to... You see all of the Red Sox suck. That's what you see. You see how they don't live up to expectations. There's always a problem. Their fans are unhappy. Their media is unhappy. And virtually every time I look, it's something like what happened this morning when I checked to standings. Oh, they're 43-37 in third place in the AL East, a half a game out of the AL wild card. If they were in the National League with that record, they'd be in the second wild card spot, pushing for the first wild card spot. I love the AL East. I love the expectations in places like Boston. It is wild. But that's what happens when you win four World Series in the last 20 years or 21, whatever it is. Ryan, where would you like to start?
It's so funny that we do these podcasts at the start of every series. And I feel like for the last month, my opening statement in every podcast is either they're great or they're horrible. They're great again somehow.
You're the voice of the fans.
Yes, to me, this last series against the Nationals, and again, it's the Nationals, okay? The Nationals they're better than expected, but they're still the Nationals.
They came in as the hottest team in the major leagues.
In the major leagues. To me, it was as fascinating a series and as much fun as I've had watching baseball in a very long time. I don't think we necessarily need to get into the Profar walk-off and the chest thumping and the throwing and the sort of brouhaha that wasn't. But just to say, the Padres, I think during that series, have managed to play really good baseball without Fernando Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, and on and on and on. I think that they're hot and they're playing really solid baseball. I'll ask you, is this as good as they've played all year?
Yes. I've been saying that they have been playing good baseball and the results haven't been there. But by and large, I believe that they have been characterized by good baseball. Right. Disappointing in terms of the record, disappointing in terms of what a few players had done. There weren't a lot of games where you go, wow, they just were horrible. Now, maybe their bullpen blew a game or two or three along the way. Certainly, you know, Manny Machado had not been performing. These types of things and the inconsistency was maddening for sure, but I feel like they have been characterized by good baseball. This was a great series. I'm going to pour some water on it a little bit in that maybe it's the rotation woes. Maybe it's they're exciting again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't help but think of 2021.
Yep.
In May and June, the Padres looked like they were going to challenge the Dodgers. As a matter of fact, at the end of May, they were in first place in the National League West. But right. They looked like, and then toward the end of June, they swept the Dodgers and they had at that point
right before the All-Star break,
yep. Seven against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, this team is never going to lose again. It was about that time that injuries started to sort of pile up. The bullpen and in the rotation, the bullpen was having to be used a lot more. And you could see, even as they progressed to 17 games above 500, I know the record or the, I think the standings say 18 or something, but it wasn't. There was a makeup game at the time in August 11th, I believe it was, of 2021, finished a series against the Marlins. They were 17 over and a disaster ensued. All right. Like one of the worst, whatever it was, 42 or 46 game finishes in the history of baseball. And I just can't help. I'm not telling you this reminds me of it or like, oh, this is going to happen or whatever. I have been thinking about that for like a couple weeks. And then in particular, as they looked like that 2021 team in terms of, you know, when they needed the big homer, they got it. And just like the excitement level. They'd like to win a few more games. Maybe like, well, not like the ninth inning Wednesday, but like Wednesday where they were actually in control the whole time and you just beat a team that you should beat.
Right. And you and I talk about this when we talk on the phone too. I find this team to be very likable and I find their games to be a lot of fun to watch more so than last year. But it's because it's back and forth. It's because their bullpen's not holding leads. It's because they trail early and then have to scramble. Right. That is not sustainable baseball. You cannot play all season and win a championship doing the high wire stuff every night. You just can't.
Right. That is a general statement, just like because they could do that, but you are spot on. Like, it's as a general statement, as a general statement, teams that are 80 games up, that have a plus 80 run differential make the playoffs or whatever it was, 120 plus, a plus 120, whatever it was that the Padres were last year and were the first team to lose like fewer than 80 or win fewer than 85 games with as high a run differential as they have. It's supposed to be this thing that indicates how good you are. Right. Like, stuff does happen. Sure. And, when they do these retrospectives, and I was just watching the Ken Griffey, documentary on MLB
Network.
And like the 95 Mariners and all that. And like, that seemed to be a team when you look back on it that they, they refused to lose and all that. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fine. That there are seasons and you can look back on it. But that doesn't mean you do it every night. That doesn't mean like you do it more often than not. As a matter of fact, what happens is when you have all these comebacks, when you have all these, you were trailing or tied in the seventh inning, like the Padres have been like 19 times this year, which is more times than last year that they came back to all last year that they came back or they won a game in which it was decided in the final three innings. Like, that's awesome. And you can say, oh, they're characterized by that. That's not how they're winning most of their games. It just, those stand out.
Right. Your games. Right. Good teams win the way the Padres won Wednesday, which is you get up big, you throw the relievers who you're going to send down or relievers who have been struggling in at the end. And yeah, you give up some runs, but it's not really a big deal. And very few teams can be sustainable. By the way, to me, this team has championship caliber traits. I mean, we're seeing career seasons from the guys who really needed to step up. And I don't want to diminish that at all. Jurickson and Profar. If there were any Jurickson and Profar doubters, I think that probably went away this weekend. He's hitting 316, OPS of nearly 900 as we head in the All-Star break. This is who he is this year. Jackson Merrill had a great story about him in today's UT from Jeff Sanders and about how his power is arriving just in time to save this team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is, Kevin, is that injuries keep mounting. And, Fernando Tatis is without a timetable. Which to me is a little terrifying, and I guess we should start there. This was a quad issue until it became a stress reaction in his femur, correct?
Yes.
I'll be honest with you, I've never heard of that from a baseball standpoint. How surprised were they that this is what that was? And if we had to sort of guess as to what a time frame is, what would it be?
You were not alone to be surprised by that. The Padres were. And by the way, when I quoted an outside doctor, an orthopedic surgeon, who said, this is not surprising that it wasn't diagnosed for a while, because this is an overuse injury. This is a training injury, a runner's injury.
Right.
And that is not what a baseball player is. Now, Fernando Tatis Jr. is in great shape and all that stuff, but like, this is not something you see. And so it would, as they say in the business, it presented as a muscle injury until it was clear, like, hey, this should be getting better, not worse. And it was getting worse, not better. And so could it be 6 weeks, put him back at the end of July? Could be, probably not is the thinking. So we're looking more like August, and that could be any time in August. I guess the good news is, you get Fernando Tatis Jr. back at the end of the year. The bad news is you got to make it to the end of the year to make that count, right? It's a thing. And we should probably, talk about what they're doing in right field.
Right. It's funny. My instinct with Tatis is, well, maybe when he comes back, he can DH. I think that maybe Jurickson Profar, with his knee injury, might be better off if he was DHing. Xander Bogaerts, when he comes back, might be better off if he's DHing. At some point, somebody has to play the field here. And their right field situation right now is not good. They sent down Jose Azokar, who had been their fourth outfielder most of the year. They called up, is it Bryce Johnson?
Bryce Johnson.
Little bit of major league experience from him, but he, to me, has not shown a whole lot in his very limited sample size with them. David Peralta is, to me, the more obvious choice to play right field every day, but he doesn't move like he used to. He's a big league hitter, but is he a big league outfielder at this stage in his career? I'm not sure. I look at all these options and go, get on the phone with somebody, get the Padres a right fielder and maybe a left fielder just to cover your butts. What do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I think they're trying, but when you also have the idea that you need a starting pitcher, maybe two, you need a reliever, maybe two, then, you know, it starts. Look, I think they're planning to not empty out the minor league system, but, you know, kind of do the thing they did a few years ago, which is get to where everyone's talking about how they don't have anybody. They emptied the cupboard. They don't have anybody. They're the 30th ranked minor league system. And they're like, okay, fine. We got a bunch of young guys you've never heard about. And plus, we'll just keep restocking it because that's what we do. I do think that, you know, that they're going to keep their upper level guys. I don't think you're going to be getting into, you know, like a James Wood. I don't think you're going to be, you know, doing that type of trade. You're not looking for Juan Soto necessarily, but you are going to have to, you know, if you want to bolster a team with the kind of players that can bolster a playoff team, you're going to have to give up some guys. So I think there's some moves coming, but like right now it is an extremely limited. Was it three games, Bryce Johnson?
Yeah.
Look, speed and defense. And what did they have him do? I think he bunted three times, two sacrifices, one that he wasn't given originally, or no, that he was given and then overturned. And then a sacrifice, a bunt hit, I think a couple walks. He's in the nine hole. So it makes it more imperative than ever. Now that you're down to a big one, I mean, unless we're making Jurickson Profar an honorary member of the bigs, right? Last year was a big four. This year you start with a big three. Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis Jr. on the IL. You know, this makes it more important than ever that Manny Machado, and who is, by the way, hitting the ball hard, and hitting. So that's big. But it's like, yeah, you are correct. You are replacing Fernando Tatis Jr. with Bryce Johnson / David Peralta. You know, they face what I think it's three righties this series. So I think you're gonna see Peralta. Once, twice. I mean, Johnson's a pinch hitter, kind of probably depends. It'll be fascinating. You got the right field. You have to play defense. That's important to Mike Schilt. Winning on the margins, which might mean, you know, we're going to manufacture some runs against a really good pitching team. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in right field this series.
Right. What makes Bryce Johnson a better option out there than Jose Azokar?
I asked that same question. They wanted Jose to get some at bats and he wasn't producing at a level that they wanted.
I agree with you. I
had no idea. And that's not anything against Bryce Johnson. Like, what do I know about Bryce Johnson? Right. Played eight games with the Giants. He can steal some bases. He's a heck of a runner. I was like, this seems like a move to make a move. That's me talking. I'm not like saying I'm right. I was just like really stunned by it. Haven't got a great answer by it, but this is what they felt was best. And I'll tell you this, it reeks of Mike Schilt having a say in it. That's my educated speculation. Not a total guess, but like, I don't have anyone telling me this, but Mike Schilt is managing his butt off with this team. And it feels like this was a piece for Mike Schilt. This was a piece to give Mike Schilt to be able to do a few more things and the switch hitting element to it.
Right. And Mike Schilt, it must be said, is the kind of guy who would know a lot about an obscure guy at AAA, more so maybe than his predecessor did.
In terms of it. And then, so what that is the conversations can be had, right? That's what it is. You're absolutely correct. You couldn't be more correct. And that allows when they get in that room, the manager has more say because the manager has concerned himself with that aspect organizationally.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes total sense. Speaking of moves, nothing has been announced just yet, but it appears as if there's one new member of the Padres bullpen and then an old friend who we may see here soon. Let's talk about the two new additions.
Austin Davis is a left-hander who's been closing for AAA El Paso. You look at his overall numbers, not great. And you go, a 3.15 or whatever it is down in El Paso. That's pretty good. Hey, take a look at the 1.80 ERA over his last 20 appearances. He's been their closer. He's allowed four runs a single run in four different games over his past 20 games. And if you're doing that while pitching in the Pacific Coast League, you're doing pretty well. So he'll come, and presumably, I haven't confirmed this, which is why I didn't put that out, but presumably Tom Cosgrove is going down. He has not pitched well. Don't know what's going on with Tom, but lefty for lefty there. And so Nabil Crismat, the old friend you referred to, he has signed a minor league deal. Nabil began the season with the Dodgers, appeared in five games with them, including here at Petco Park. One of the finest humans that I've come across in my career. Actually, one of the more fun guys to watch because he's throwing it up there at 90 miles an hour. Love it. Interesting. He's going to, you know, he'll be at AAA. Is the, because it's a minor league deal. I don't know exactly what the timeline or the plan is with him, but you can presume that. And okay, so they send Johnny Brito down to be a starter, to come back eventually as a starter, right? So if that happens, then is, if Nabil pitches well enough, is, could he come back and be your long guy, right? Because you're really hoping, you just see him right on the precipice that Adrian Morahone is going to become more of a high leverage guy. You know, every time you want him to do that, you know, something happens, right? But it's very interesting that they, but it was really for Nabil, as much as it tugs at all of our hearts, it's kind of a depth piece for Nabil.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a guy, again, he is who he is, right? He's on the, is he on the wrong side of 30? He's a long guy, and an up and down guy, as we've seen, right? He's been a Dodger once or twice.
He just spent a month with Rangers pitching for Ground Rock. Yeah, last year with the Diamondbacks. I mean, that's just where, like, a reliever like him, and many relievers, is gonna, is kind of toss around for a while. But he pitched some big games for the Padres, man. Pitched some big games. Has done, like, and he's just a good guy.
I think we struck this tone. We struck this tone last September when they signed Jurickson Profar too, right? Where we went, good guy to have around. Probably not a big piece, but, you know, somebody who, yeah, good guy, you know? And so you never know. That's the beauty of baseball, right?
Yes. I will say this, that always been a huge fan of Jurickson Profar's on-field presence. And the crazy thing, and I said this a bunch of times at the time, couldn't really quantify it, right? And by no means am I taking any credit for Jurickson Profar batting 320 with like a 920 OPS. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the one thing I would say about his on-field is that I always would be like, I don't know exactly how to quantify this. I don't necessarily have numbers for it, but Jurickson Profar is always in the middle of something. He could go 1-for-5 on a night, but it's almost guaranteed he was then also going to have a run, or he had a productive out going 0-for-4, or a walk that was like 12 pitches, or a 12 pitch, you know, strikeout that then the guy after him hit a home run. Like, Jurickson Profar is a winning piece, and has been ever since he joined the Padres. This year, this is one of the great stories in baseball.
It is one of the great stories in baseball. Absolutely. Padres Red Sox 3-game series starting tonight. Let's go through this just a little bit. You know, looking at it on paper, I'm not sure I like the Padres' chances in a series where Randy Vasquez and the scuffling Michael King go games one and games two. But, you know, Vasquez is coming off of 5 shutout innings, faced the Red Sox before as a member of the Yankees. Nick Pivetta's just kind of okay, 4-4 with a 4.06 ERA. That is tonight. Saturday, it's Michael King versus Tanner Houck. And then Sunday, it's Padres ace Matt Waldron against Red Sox right-hander Josh Winkowski.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it has to be. I mean, it's Winkowski. It has to be. Winkowski. We need to make that any harder than it is, but yeah.
What do you make of these Red Sox, Kevin?
Well, Tanner Houck's one of the best pitchers in the major leagues. Yes. The numbers speak for themselves. And I mean, we're talking just, I think if I'm not, like, he has not gone less than 5 2/3, and that's happened twice. He goes 6, he goes 7, he has a shutout this year. This is one of the top pitchers in the majors.
He leads the AL in ERA plus, lowest home run rate in the AL, and leads the majors with a 2.21 FIP. There you go.
So there you go. He's doing it all himself. Right. Now, Winkowski, who goes against Waldron on Sunday, I believe just came up recently, has pitched mostly out of the bullpen, but I believe went 6 innings out of the bullpen in his last appearance. So you're talking about a, you know, hey, okay, Padres might be catching a little break there. Pivetta, as you mentioned, you know, a guy But so is Randy Vasquez. You know, Randy Vasquez hasn't pitched enough to qualify. If he did, he'd have the highest whip in the majors. This guy gives up a lot of hits. Randy Vasquez has really good stuff. I'm not going to say great. He's got really good stuff. He throws a lot of pitches down the middle. Finds himself in, you know, a 2-1 count, whatever, and he gives up a lot of hits. Are the Red Sox the, you know, the Red Sox of 2018? No, they're not. But, you know, they got some good hitters. And, you know, yeah, I'm kind of with you there, like Randy Vasquez. Now, Michael King, he had a bad outing. Well, I shouldn't say that. He had a bad inning, which qualifies you as having a bad outing. When you give up, was it 5 in one inning? Yeah, that's a bad outing, right? It was kind of amazing. Because the other 4 innings were like Cy Young stuff. Yeah. So, and he has had really good games this year. And I think that he hasn't been pitching well. This is a crucial point of the year for him. And I also want to point that out. I wrote about it in the newsletter the other day. They were really looking forward to getting some rest for Michael King without taking him out of the rotation. Now, Yu Darvish isn't back. Does that mean that they have to keep Adam Mazur in the rotation? Do they try to skip Adam Mazur now that they play, counting yesterday, 9 off days in like 26 days. So from now till July 22nd, which is the series after the All-Star break, Padres have a bunch of days off where they were really looking forward to, hey, you know, this gives guys 5-6 to keep all 5 starters in. This gives 5-7 days between starts. You know, this is where we catch up because the Padres are the first team by far to reach the midpoint of the season. They played 2, 3, 4, 5 games more than some other teams still. So this is a crucial time of the year where we see Michael King push through the fact that he's going to pass his career high in innings in a season here coming up probably 2 starts from now.
Yeah. Is Xander Bogaerts on the trip?
Yes, he is.
Obviously, he's taken some steps lately to at least give some fans some optimism that he'll return sooner rather than later. What's going on there?
I like how you say that, some fans, some optimism. Because
those who like him would be encouraged.
Yes, yeah. I figured this is what you meant. Xander was hitting pretty well before he went on the IL, but like absolutely. It's almost like his season's going to start over now because it's been so long. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's out on a rehab assignment by the end of this trip or sometime early July. He's pushing for before the All-Star break. I don't have a sense of how realistic that is, but what I have seen and have been told is he's basically doing everything. So, right, he took BP for the first time on the field. He's using both hands. He has started to throw. I think he's 3 days into that. He's been on the field for more than a week, taking grounders, seen a lot of range of motion. So things are good. I think there's going to be another CT scan coming up. And then it'll be like, okay, how you feeling? How's the look? Okay, rehab assignment, week, boom, back. So that's where Xander's at.
Right. And this is ahead of schedule for him.
It is. And he said like a month or something. So by the way, we'd like passed that like a week ago. So if he goes a month and a half, or if he's back in 2 weeks, that'd be pretty incredible.
Yeah. And this is a team who needs him. I mean, they need him anyway. But right.
And I'm thinking you made a great point. Jay Cronenworth's been fantastic at second. Yep. Now, I will say that it hasn't shown up a lot. But, you know, Jake was pretty good at first, too. And Luis Arraez has done okay there.
Right. Right. How's Luis Arraez's, I'm going to use air quotes here, ouchie?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal, but that's just from the team. And so we'll see the lineup today. But my understanding is it's not a big deal.
Okay. Very interesting. Kevin, we always put you on the spot here. Today's very simple. You've been to every ballpark in the big leagues?
Yeah.
Where does Fenway rank?
Oh, top 5 for sure. Though I have not been, I have not been as a writer in 25 years. I've been Chargers would come here. Mm-hmm. My son, huge baseball guy, he came on a couple trips with me and we would go to Fenway as fans. Right. Mm-hmm. So that was great. My wife and I, one time we sat up on the wall, those are great seats. So wow. As a fan, but when you ask me where things rank, I always take into account, what do I the sights, the views. When I walk the ballpark, what do I see? If I got food there. And then I also bring in the press box and the working conditions. The last time I was there, I mean, it seems like 100 years ago, because back in the 90s, the ballparks, they just hadn't upgraded them a lot, right? And Fenway was basically like it was in the 50s. It had like pebbles in the infield. Like, you know, you had to step across plywood. Like it would flood down there to get from the clubhouse to the field. And then the visitor's clubhouse was like a closet. And man, they don't stand for that anymore. No. So it's been remodeled. So I look forward to seeing a little behind the scenes, but how you could go there in whatever capacity you go there and not be overwhelmed by how wonderful it is, how odd it is and beautiful. I don't know how you could do that if you, it's fantastic. So I have, it's in my top five. I mean, Petco is in there, and Wrigley, Oracle, PNC, and I don't think you put anybody else than above Fenway.
Baltimore? Is Baltimore in the conversation or no?
It's all right. It's a little overrated. I know you're going next month.
I'm going. So, yeah, I've never been.
It's nice. It's got, I mean, any place that has you know, the big building out there and all that, it's, look, give them credit. It started basically the revolution. Right. Camden Yards basically started the revolution. New park, old look. It's fantastic. But there are many that are better.
Right. It's also a 33-year-old stadium.
That's why I say give them credit.
Right. It was as old as Qualcomm was, like when the Padres made the 98 World Series.
That's they just happened to have built it at a time with a vision. Mm-hmm. And I just was explaining why it wasn't up near, probably even in my top 10. Right. But look, every ballpark, I'm bummed I don't get to go to the Coliseum anymore. Right. The uniqueness, here's the thing, when you cover, and I've been to all the NFL stadiums, there's not much difference. Unless you have $80,000 a game to spend on some suite that looked, you know, it's like your living room for an NFL game, there's Lambeau and the rest.
This is what, I have a family member who covers the NFL. And that is his thing. He said Lambeau is the one stadium he looks forward to going to every year. He said there's the next tier that's
he covers that division.
Right. And then, you know, then he says, you know, SoFi, Minneapolis, the sort of newest stadiums are right under that. Everything else is kind of the same.
They're neat, but they're not different dimensions. Every NFL stadium, every NFL field is the exact same size.
Yep.
There's a bowl of, you know, there's this. Baseball is unique, and it's one of my favorite things about it, is to be able to experience all the oddities.
More odd stadium in baseball than Fenway Park.
It would be tough to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres Red Sox 3-game series starting tonight at Fenway Park. Join us next time, Kevin. We're going to talk about Bruce Bochy, Will Venable, and the Texas Rangers. But first, 3-game series against Boston in Boston. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.